Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia. We're at episode 17, and I'm actually in the middle of packing for my U.S. trip. This weekend, I flew from Hong Kong to San Francisco, and I'm taking a road trip around the country with my wife and my friend Attila. If you guys want to check out the trailer, I made a funny video on socialagent.me/roadtrip. Okay, up today, we have an interview with Jennifer Chang. She's a very ambitious businesswoman who I've been fortunate enough to have known over the years doing business in Hong Kong. I first met her in some startups meetings, and she was involved with building up the group buying business in Hong Kong, and she's been involved extensively in the group buying world. We're going to interview her today about her current venture, Glamit, and getting some insights about leveraging both her retail store in Kowloon as well as her online retail business. So hope you guys enjoy. We have with us Jennifer Chang, and we're in her Hong Kong home office. Thanks for being here, Jennifer.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Mike Michelini.
Yeah, we're getting names down here. All right, Jennifer, do you mind introducing yourself to our listeners today?
So I am what you call an ABC. I was an American-born Chinese, meaning I'm born in the U.S., had nothing to do with Asia until recently. So I came to Hong Kong for business school a few years ago, and I fell in love with Hong Kong, long story short, and I decided to stay. And while I was getting my MBA, I actually got involved with different startups here, and then after my MBA, I first was at Rackspace, then got poached by a startup that was called YouBuyBuy, got acquired by Groupon after a few months, then went on to BeCrazy, which is now Hong Kong's largest e-commerce site. And last year, our revenues were approaching, you know, over 100 million US a year. So when I joined, we were about like five to eight people. And then when I left, we were close to like over 150, going towards 200 people. So it's been quite a journey for me from a sort of a startup point of view. I went on to co-found another company afterwards, which is sort of like the Birchbox clone of Asia. And now I have my own brand as well. So my track record's been pretty much startups. Yeah. Serial entrepreneur, and then BeCrazy had a pretty exciting exit recently, which Mike and I can get more into near the end of this interview. Hold on.
Thanks, Jennifer. Yeah, definitely one of the most influential entrepreneurs, and especially female entrepreneurs in Hong Kong that I know, and we're really lucky to have you on the show. When I think of your expertise, it's in e-commerce, group buying, and in Asia now. So I'm also curious to learn about how you deal with the e-commerce from Hong Kong with maybe in respect to group buying and your current Glamit projects, payments, languages, things like that.
So you actually, the first thing you have to think about when you build an e-commerce platform is who your eventual customer and who your audience is. So for group buying, what you see in different markets, not just Hong Kong, different localized markets, is obviously that they're usually bilingual or that they at least have the local language. So for BeCrazy, it was a no-brainer, obviously. The primary language would be Chinese. And then funnily enough for me, since I was a recent transplant here, it was actually not until I met with like thousands of merchants literally and convinced them to do group buying that I became more and more fluent in Cantonese. But Chinese is really, really difficult to write and read. While I could help with English copywriting and our English marketing, we'd always have to, you know, get back together with the group and figure out what that translated to from the Chinese and the consumer point of view. So as far as BeCrazy, Groupon, those sites go, you'll see it's bilingual. Sometimes with sites, you'll see like simplified Chinese, traditional Chinese, English as well. And then with Glamit, everyone's asking me why it's not in Chinese. And my answer is because Hong Kong is not my primary market. Actually, most of our customers are overseas. And if I were just to handle the Hong Kong market, I don't think most businesses in this day and age can survive without having some degree of, you know, global, because nowadays none of your customers are going to be all within, you know, walking distance or MTR right away. And so while I think like physical retail is important and online retail is important, the best thing to do is if you can establish as many channels as possible. And it's from that sort of mindset that we decided decided, okay, you know what? It's best if our brand is Glamit is seen as a more international brand, even a Western brand. So I'd rather just conserve my resources, run a lean team, and have this site only in English until I have the resources to have it in Chinese as well.
Yeah, I agree. To deal with multiple languages, multiple currencies is difficult. In Hong Kong specifically, with the group buying, people were buying online? Was it payments online or was it payments offline? Or
oh, actually, so this is the funny thing. With group buying, the payments were a little bit of both. I think in Hong Kong, the customer and the shopper is more sophisticated nowadays. Like, you don't even think twice. You take out your credit card or you take out your PayPal account or, you know, Alipay, whatever it is you're using. And, you know, they're used to online transacting. But in places like China and also in other places in Southeast Asia, what we would often see is that people would, like, they preferred and they had more of a feeling of safety when they paid, you know, cold hard cash, cash on delivery, things like that. You would see sort of a mix of these, especially when it came to different types of deals and merchants. I mean, there were some deals that were, or some promotions that were redeemed at the door, for example, and then some of the merchants obviously preferred to take cash. We had a Shanghai Hairy Crab deal back in the day, and I think, you know, a lot of people, even when they bought the voucher online, if they went and bought more crabs, of course they would pay the Hairy Crab merchant in cash. I mean, it really depends on, again, the customer and the person doing business with them and sort of what they prefer. At the end of the day, you know, the more currency that you and the more options and ways you have of transacting, the better. Another thing that we noticed with group buying is that even though it was a virtual platform, we and a lot of other sites started having physical redemption spots so people actually touch the good, feel it. I mean, that's another reason why with Glamit, for example, I built the online first. I called it From Clicks to Bricks. So basically I started out, you know, making sure that everything was working online. And then a few months later, I got a physical retail store so that people could come in and actually, you know, touch and try on the makeup, try on the clothes, and really, you know, feel all 360 degrees of the journey. Because I think right now, a lot of people in the US, you'll see things like showrooming where people will like go see the product and then buy it online, which is cheaper. And I think in Asia, you kind of see the opposite of showrooming, where people will see something online and then they would rather go buy it physically. So what's best is if you can cater to this ever-evolving, sophisticated, fickle consumer and really just kind of embrace the fact that, you know, now it might take someone looking at it on their iPad, then, you know, chatting about it on their phone and then looking at it, you know, a blog review and then going into the shop before then buying it, you know, using their computer or their tablet again. So right now there are a lot more touch points.
Yeah, I like the clicks to bricks. That's a great tagline there. And so it's interesting. And yeah, so you're English only with your web presence on Glamit. And then people come, and you have a physical store. I visited one of your early, when you were just getting started up, and maybe we can put some pictures of it.
My first store. Yeah. The second one, yeah, you're totally welcome to come by anytime. We're only a block away from Harbor City. So anyone who doesn't want to like walk around famous designer brands in Harbor City can come a block away and visit little old Glamit.
Great. Yeah. So are they mostly like locals or are they like Lawai or foreigners or is it mix? Or?
It's a mix. I think our prices are more, you know, clients tend to be more upscale because our products are now at Harvey Nichols. I launched it there a couple months ago. And really, when we look at sort of the girls who come in, a lot of them are either, if you care about beauty and if you can pay that kind of price, I think, you know, most of them wouldn't shrink at playing about $100 for a t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And then the glam pack that retails about $100. So we're seeing that, you know, the girls are really self-selected, our customers. And I mean, being at Harvey Nichols, we see a lot of sort of tie ties and, you know, more well-heeled customers. But at the same time, we can see the aspirational, like girls who are maybe saving up more of their like disposable income to go in there and buy a glam pack. Like I literally, you know, one girl was like, I love it. She was like 18 and she was like, oh, I saved up my, you know, I was spending money and my tutoring money and then got a glam backed. And I was like, oh, wow. So basically, you know, they see the value there. They see the innovation and they love the makeup. I would say that it's a mixture. It's a mixture of like locals and a mixture of expats. And then for the expats, they see the convenience factor. They're like, wow, your makeup compact is a light. It's rechargeable. I can turn on. I can customize my makeup. So yeah, people who are savvy about their cosmetics, it's kind of a universal Yeah, I'm rambling now, but
it's good. So I think, you know, I'm also spoiled in Hong Kong. You can just go jump on MTR and go there rather than buying online. So I probably would even foreigners would probably rather maybe just go to their store and see it, touch it, look at it, buy it. And that's interesting. My other question is merchant accounts or Visa, MasterCard. I think we've also seen in our own startup groups, a lot of people always looking for merchant accounts. What do you use or how do you solve that or what do you recommend?
We're still like trying to find the perfect solution ourselves. But the problem with like a lot of merchant accounts and some of the different options available is that they take a really big chunk out of, you pay a fixed fee and then you also pay a percentage of the, you know, each transaction. So it gets very pricey very fast. I would say that we haven't settled on our final solution yet. With group buying though, for example, since we were having so many transactions and the volume was so high, we had better bargaining power. So obviously, if you're an e-commerce giant, for example, you're like a regular retail giant. So you can actually get, you know, probably better terms, not surprising. And you can also, you know, you have access to building a more robust payment transaction sort of marketplace. Yeah. But obviously, don't go and get those things until you need them, is what I'm saying. Yeah.
I'm a customer, Glamit, PayPal. So PayPal is, PayPal, I think, is still probably the main way in Hong Kong.
Yes. So PayPal is still the main for, I mean, I think outside of China, PayPal is most sort of widely sort of seen ubiquitous payment gateway. And one of the reasons why we do accept it on Glamit too is that when people see PayPal, as they see the logo, they're like, hey, I recognize that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've transacted on other sites and, you know, so having a trusted payment gateway helps not just for the transaction, but helps engender that feeling of like, okay, this is a safe place to put my money from the customer point of view. So yes, we do accept PayPal. And yes, I really appreciate your business, Michael.
I just know with online business, especially in Asia, is online payments. And a lot of our listeners always ask, how do people accept, you know, credit card or money? HSBC is the main bank. I don't know if that's your bank, but
There's some things that in Hong Kong, since it's such a small market, usually if you're not using one thing, you're using the other. There's like at most in every category, like maybe two players that dominate, unless like it's the category that's not completely saturated yet. So the main bank that a lot of people use is HSBC. And then, you know, most people are accepting PayPal. The other thing is I want to quickly clarify that Michael was a customer, but he was buying it for someone else. He was buying a gift. He wasn't using makeup himself. Maybe I can convert you later.
I'm not yet that crazy. I've been in Asia for a while, but still.
You're not that creative. Makeup.
not yet. Maybe I'll be a convert. More years to go. Okay. So I think, you know, you have definitely a lot of different experiences now with your like English International Glamit website and then your local Be Crazy group buying. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of our listeners are Westerners or, you know, Lawai, and they're in Asia. Mm-hmm. And I think they're trying to figure out how to deal with all these channels and different cultures and languages. So I think it's been very helpful so far. Do you want to maybe give the scoop about your IPO and that process or at least some highlight?
I'm the second person in my family to have like had an IPO happen in the past decade, I guess. It was very funny because people would like look at me and half joke and be like, oh, what is Be Crazy gonna IPO someday? So what actually did happen is that we were acquired, and the acquiring company as well as the companies they acquired in the other markets, we all got listed together on the Australian Stock Exchange about a couple weeks ago, and it was super exciting. I mean, you know, because I went from like literally like taking cabs from meeting to meeting to meeting, trying to convince people to like sign up for group buying. And, you know, I'd be writing like copywriting the next deal of the next, you know, that we're going to put up next while on my way to my next meeting while in the cab. And then like calling the office and being like, guys, have you uploaded the pictures and the words yet? And then to have like this happen. I mean, Be Crazy started in late 2010. Right. So like for it to happen, like, you know, like 3 years later, that's pretty insane. I have never seen. I mean, I don't know. Maybe like that's just I think it's a really fast trajectory even for startup world. And I'm really, really proud of our team. I'm really like I'm still really good friends with my former boss, the CEO of Be Crazy. And, you know, I can't imagine a company that like we're scrappy little Be Crazy, and then like we kind of made it, and really, really proud, because it's like we set out to sort of like be more than a group buying site. And I think for a while there, like I saw my face in so many magazines and newspapers when we were like, you know, growing and growing. But we wanted, we were aiming to be Hong Kong's most loved group buying site and the most loved e-commerce site. And I would say now we've evolved into more of like an Amazon type model. Because you look, there's like hundreds of items available for sale at any given point. It wasn't like, hey, here's one deal today. Hi, there's another deal tomorrow. So for us to like have that crazy, you know, spurt of growth and for us to be able to, you know, scale up, like I just look back and I'm like, wow, that's like amazing, amazing journey. And I learned so, so much. I mean, in that kind of environment, I really got to flex my sales skills, so to speak, manage a team of like, you know, 50 salespeople. And it's, as we got bigger and bigger, and you know, you have to, you see how different things that might work for a startup in the beginning don't work as the company scales. So you have to make sure, you know, the sales and marketing is working together, operations are able to fully support all that. It's crazy, literally crazy. Yeah. And back then, like, I mean, I kind of look at it as like the little engine that could, the little steam engine that could. And a lot of it's about luck too, because I can't say like, oh, every startup and every founder I've ever met, they hit it big. But if any group ever deserved that, like, you know, I think the Be Crazy team totally did.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I remember your beginnings, and you guys are definitely hustlers everywhere.
We're hustlers. Yeah. I come to like the startup things and be like, hey, anyone see the deal today? Buy some. We got pizza. Hurry, come on, buy some deals. Yeah. I mean, but I think a lot of it's also about like passion and love for what you're doing. And I think you cannot fake that. For sure. And then for me, like, it was about, you know, being, I don't know, like, it's not even about, like, financial. Like, I'm still, like, I think I'll always be, I'll always have that sort of hungry mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, like, the sort of hunger to, like, create, build. I mean, I talked to the Be Crazy CEO. He's definitely not going to, like, be resting on his laurels. He's still, like, you know, wheeling, dealing, hustling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, I mean, that's always a good sign of an entrepreneur, right? The money is not the main driver. It's the passion.
No.
It's yeah, it's great.
The passion. And then how that translated into the sort of, for me, the Glamet experience is that I had all this experience sort of building virtual platforms and all this, you know, all these online and integrating social media and really, really flexing sort of and getting so much experience that I really wanted to go back to sort of the basics and touch my next product. And that's why I invented Glampax. That's why I decided to launch Glamet. For me, this is more of a real sort of like long-term thing. I have gotten actually acquisition offers. I got them before I even finished out the first few months. And I was saying like, you know, this is way too early. I wanted to build Glamet. My dream is to build Glamet into an iconic brand and not just have, you know, our hero product and a few other SKUs. So, like, right now we came out with our hand cream and our balm. Our Glam Pact is the first, I mean, you saw it. It's the first ever customizable, refillable makeup compact that has everything in it. First all-in-one. And it has a light-up mirror, which can be recharged. Mm-hmm. And for many girls, like, when I played our video, they would be watching and they'd be like, ooh, oh, whoa, like they would be kind of like, wait, the light turns on and then it's like a little light bulb goes off in their head. And I'm like, yeah, this is really great. You can like, you know, glam up in the cab, in the MTR, you know, anywhere. If you don't have enough light, you can turn on that light. And you don't have to, you know, abandon your date, like, or your friends when you have to go to the bathroom. You can just, you know, do it at the office, wherever you need to do your makeup. And this is really convenient for a busy professional woman. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of women, I don't have to really explain it. For guys, they're kind of like staring at it, like, what is this? What, a smartphone for your makeup? And I'm like, yeah, it's a smartphone for your makeup. I want people to eventually be able to download their makeup into their phone, one-click shopping for their makeup. We're actually working on another sort of product for Glampack that I've been hinting at. But basically, we're trying to create sort of an app store out of this and a mobile app wherein, like, we are working with many, many brands.
We're talking offline is you're trying to put technology with cosmetics, and
yeah.
That's a pretty...
Actually, what most people don't realize is that everyone's like, oh, Glamet is a, you know, yes, it's products, but and it's a brand. But it's masquerading as, you know, a cosmetics and fashion brand. But what people don't realize is that at the heart of it, we're actually a tech company. And we really, really are. Like, the business model, which I hope more people will see, is not just straight up, like, brand, retail, online retail, e-commerce. But we'll be working with brands on sort of licensing opportunities, as well as ways to, I mean, when we release in the next several months our app, people will see exactly how much of a tech company we are.
Great.
Yeah.
I look forward to it. Definitely been following along, so it's great. You. Just the last question is some tips for maybe a new startup or a new company coming to Asia. Maybe, well, I think a lot of listeners are Westerners or up-and-coming entrepreneurs. So some, maybe it's just one simple way that they can get involved or get started that you can think of. Like maybe, you know, it depends on a person and their business, but maybe around internet businesses, e-commerce.
I would say for me, I was really lucky. I've been really lucky to be able to just take risks all my life. And I'm lucky. I had a very supportive family growing up and who are continuing to be very, very supportive, whatever I sort of dream up next. Before I came to Hong Kong, I was an actress and model. I was almost on the show Gossip Girl. And I was doing pretty well, actually, as, acting in the U.S. I had a lot of IMDb credits and TV and film appearances. But I think at the end of the day, it's still about sort of being fearless, or if you can't sort of, I don't think if you like are the type to really hedge your bets that you can really be an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. It really is, because if you aren't willing to kind of risk it all, there's someone out there who is even crazier who will. So unless you can find the proper mix, like, for example, if you don't need to really, like, work to put food on the table, or if you have a partner that is willing to, you know, put up with your entrepreneurial mindset, or if you can find, like, I always think it's best if it's a single founder at the company, or if you have two co-founders who are, like, really good, sort of like as good as married, won't get like divorced in a startup sense, right? And then I think if you can assemble, you know, yourself, or assemble, surround yourself with people that you can trust who are a really good team. Because one of the things I notice in startup communities is that there's a lot of talk and no do. Mm-hmm. I was active initially in some of the sort of startup events before I actually started in the startup scene. But I think a true sign of whether you're really like making it is if you have any time left. And if you don't have any time left and you are hardly ever seen, that's actually a better sign that you're putting your nose to the grindstone and working on whatever it is you're working. Because if you like fill up your time with like, oh, now I got to do like this errand or that errand, and I got to go meet this person for whatever reason, you basically have to have a reason you're picking up the phone to talk to someone. Is it going to further your business? Is there a reason I'm going to be running to bank today? Is it something that helps my business? Is there a reason I'm doing this? So if you can sort of piggyback your business as your baby almost on anything you're doing, then I think you have sort of the beginnings of the recipe for success. And then the other thing is, you know, try to find people who can do as much as they say. They're not just talking a good game. Because even right now, like sometimes I cringe when some people call me like an entrepreneur, because I mean, everybody calls themselves an entrepreneur these days, right? And then when people are like, oh, Jennifer is like the best known like female entrepreneur, I'm very flattered. Like, you know, I'm working towards that for sure. But then when people sort of add that qualifier, female, then I'm like, well, I think I'm better than most of the male entrepreneurs out there. So I don't mind when people call me a female entrepreneur, but it's kind of like, you know, I'm a female business person. Does that mean I'm not as good? But I think like now my track record is getting better and better. And, you know, a good portion of my previous startups have had really good exits now, and I'm very proud of this Be Crazy one. I'm still like, right, actually, when our acquirers and when our parent company comes this month, we're going to totally be celebrating it. Yeah, I'm definitely very excited.
Like I said earlier, I said best known entrepreneur, and of course female too. But but you've also been interviewing other female entrepreneurs too, and supporting that network. Yeah. So I think it's good that we highlight that you're a female, but you're very strong minded and hustler and doer. So that's definitely.
I'd like to see more girls become entrepreneurs, because I think we're very natural at being them. And I think if we can get, because I think what I've heard from some of the girls in the startup scene in the past, and even in tech, like I think there can be definitely more women, females who code. Like one thing I would say to all my friends who might, you know, have daughters or going to have children, get your girls learning code as like sort of another language, mm-hmm. because it's really empowering. And, you know, you see someone like me, and I'm sure like half the founders out there were like, oh no, like, you know, there's a dearth of technical talent. Shit, I should teach myself how to code, right? It just opens up a world of options, and, you know, you can really, like half the time right now, I'm like, how do I translate this into words that my developer can understand and then create that product I want, right? Yeah. And how do I improve my user interface and really get this other person to understand, and like, you know, get everyone to room together to understand. I think this problem would be solved if from like the top down, we just involve women more. Mm-hmm. And then at these events, like I remember when I was at Rackspace, I would go to a tech conference and like literally I'd be like one of like two or three girls in the room. Mm-hmm. And people would look at me like I was a unicorn because it was like, you know, what's she doing here? She must be doing sales, mm-hmm. which is probably true, right? But I think at the end of the day, we need to see more of us, more gals coming out to these startup events and supporting each other. And what you're referring to is my Lean In series that I was writing for SCMP. Yeah. But yeah, if you know of any good female entrepreneurs, actually, you're going to be in my, I got to think of a better word, but Guaylos in China interview. So when you get back from the States, yeah. from the Bay Area and everywhere where you're going, I want to hear all about your ventures so I can feature it on my column as well.
Great. Yeah. Definitely, I'm looking forward to it. All right, Jennifer, and just we'll link all this on the podcast article. Maybe also if there's a way people can reach out to you or...
Sure. So on Twitter, I'm at Jen, J-E-N-N Glamco, G-L-A-M-C-O. And on Facebook, that's my same tagline. And on Facebook and Instagram as well. And I try to keep the same... It's actually really smart if you can keep the same sort of screen name. I've been guilty of switching in the past. Like I was like Bunny before and yeah. then I was this and that. But I think if you can, especially for all entrepreneurs out there, if you have one single handle across all your board, all of your social media, it's much easier for people to find you. And it's much easier for you to remember like passwords and do things yourself. Yeah. So.
We'll link that too on the post. So thanks for being with us, Jen.
Yep. Thanks okay. again, Michael.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. Thanks for that, Jennifer. And so I hope you guys enjoyed our interview. She's also on doing a series, Western Entrepreneurs Doing Business in China, and her and I hopefully will do an interview for that series, so stay tuned for that. So the interesting point about doing business in Hong Kong is its density. As Jennifer pointed out, you know, a lot of people still are, you know, not really totally embracing e-commerce or online business with, you know, a population of about 7 million people and everything really kind of like networked through its extensive MTR network. People are still used to kind of going to the store, seeing the product, buying, you know, on site. A good friend of mine, Larry Salibra, who I hope to get on the show on one of these upcoming episodes. And you know, we interviewed AsiaPay last week and he pointed out that, you know, even with AsiaPay, it redirects to AsiaPay's website when you buy online. So if you check out through a shopping cart and select Visa MasterCard with their service, it will go to their website, which, you know, I think a lot of people aren't used to that in Western business. You know, you can integrate on your own shopping cart with your own, you know, secure checkout. But, you know, I think Hong Kong does have a ways to go with online business and e-commerce. So hopefully we can see that develop over the years. And that's actually part of the mission of this show is to make it more transparent and easy for people to do business in Hong Kong online and globally. You know, any feedback and insights are appreciated. Thank you guys. And stay tuned for next week.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.